come my way. Girl to hold in my arms and know the magic of her charms. Cause I want girl to call my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream alone.
Welcome back to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. We dive now into the huge business of online dating. Why is the industry so powerful? How does it work? And what's the best way to actually find someone online? To answer those questions, I'm joined by Meshach Biskorsky, Associate Professor of Business Administration at Harvard Business School. Meshach Biskorsky, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
One of the interesting phenomena that you point out here in your research is that people really did just fine 10, 15, 20 years ago, dating people, meeting people, making business connections. We didn't really need all this infrastructure, right, online to help us do it. So the question is, if people did just fine before, why is Facebook, you know, why is eHarmony so popular? Mm. I mean, this is not like the beginning of people getting married, right?
Right. You know, the ways in which we're interacting are extremely, extremely normatively specified. So there is a real restrictions on what we can and cannot do in the offline world. So, for example, you and I have just met. It would be really, really awkward for me to say, hey, you seem like a really cool person. Can I see what you did last Saturday? Can I look at your pictures? And you'd be probably a little bit put off by that. You'd probably think it's a little bit awkward. Meshach, you just met me. It's a little funny. But yet, if we became friends on Facebook, I would do exactly the same thing, right? And I would check your pictures, and that's sort of very normatively accepted. And the reason for that is that, look, when I go and look at your pictures on Facebook, you don't really know this. You don't really know that I've looked at your pictures. And so that allows me to actually overcome some of these norms of being not against being nosy, with me going on a social platform and basically checking out your pictures. In fact, you might actually want me to see some of your life. You might actually want to come across to as a sort of a complete person to me. And yet it would be equally awkward for you to come up to me and say, Meshach, look at what I did last Saturday. Isn't that cool? I'd be thinking like, okay, this is great, but why are you showing this to me? And yet we might sort of both want to, that interaction to happen. It's just really awkward to do that. And, you know, the secret of success of Facebook actually lies in sort of taking these really straightforward interactions that we all deeply interested in, and there's these real restrictions against what we can and cannot do, and sort of overcoming them really, really in sort of very simple ways. You know, in many ways, dating sites in many ways try to do that too. There is all these, if you see somebody you like, you know, you always think, should I approach this person? Should I not approach this person? If you structure the dating site correctly, you can actually help people reach out in ways that would never reach out to others. So that's why we see the attraction of these sites.
Right. There's that hurdle. Does that person want to go out and date with me? Well, if you meet them through a dating site, they of course want to go out.
Right.
I mean,
right.
They're not attached. I mean, all those things that you have to worry about if you're meeting somebody in a casual setting or bar or whatever, you may not – it takes away a lot of those barriers.
That's not to say that still some of these dating sites are subject to some of these problems, but at least not as acute as they would be in the offline world.
Okay, so I'd like to talk about some of these social platforms which you've studied, and I think there's really interesting stuff here. Let's start with dating, and then I want to get to other things like LinkedIn. But when you look at dating sites, there's so many out there, and I think for most people, it's a little bit of a coin toss. You know, maybe a friend of theirs went on a dating site. They're hoping that that one works for them too. But these dating sites approach things sometimes fundamentally differently. Talk about those differences and what you see as working versus not working.
So if you think about how people in general form relationships, again, in the offline world, we usually form relationships through participation in joint activities. We use some sort of broker, so we get some third party to tell us who we should meet. And then we engage in these sort of market-like situations when we go to a bar and hope to meet someone. And usually people, when they look for a partner, they actually use three of those different ways of looking for somebody. And in many ways, the online dating industry sort of resembles that. There's sort of three different types of finding people. One is through activities. There's actually a lot of sites out there that don't advertise themselves as dating sites, and yet they have a tremendous dating component to them. So Meetup, for example, I mentioned before, is a place where people go and engage in common activities like going hiking together. Well, you know, you can go hiking together and still talk to a lot of people and really find people this way. And the advantage of doing that is it's much more low-key. You're not putting yourself out there so much on the market. And so I sometimes advise people that some of the best ways of meeting people is actually not going on a dating site at all. It's actually engaging in all these activities when you can meet very similar people to you, and it's just much more low key. So it actually might be easier for you to engage in this because some people just don't want to be seen as actively looking. So that's sort of one sort of often forgotten way of which people still interact, which is activities, which is actually how we meet most of our spouses. The second one is sort of on the other extreme is the market way. So there's the bar way. And, you know, when you think about the development of the dating industry, that's how it started. So the matches.com, the OkCupids of the world, which are sort of the two interesting sites that many people join, are pretty much bars where sort of people put out their profiles out there and they sort of email each other and reach out to each other. And then in the middle, I think, is the sort of the broker way, which is there's a third party that tells you who you should contact. And in the online world, it's the chemistries and the eHarmony of the world that actually allow you to do that. So there are some real differences between sort of dating through the eHarmony and chemistry and the sort of Match and OkCupid, so sort of the broker versus the market model. In the market model, you get this just tremendous breadth. I mean, it's like you walk into a bar with infinite number of people.
And this is where you can see people's face shots and you're sort of looking. Correct. I mean, it is like a bar, except, correct, right, the people, correct, can't, correct, see you back.
Yeah. And when you actually do research on this, what you find is that these sites are used, they really help you build that breadth, really help you understand what the market looks like. So if you actually do, I did research on OkCupid and try to understand who are the kinds of people who are most likely to look at others. You find that it's traditionally people who would have hardest time actually getting to know people in the offline world that are most likely to search for others. So if you look at men, it's the shorter men, it's the more overweight men, and it's the older men that actually have a tendency to look at more women with whom to establish a relationship. For women, it's actually taller women, older women, and more overweight women that tend to look more at others. So it's nice to find it because it tells you that they're really helping those people who probably have the hardest time to do this in the offline world.
But are they really helping those people? Just looking at people does not mean finding a match.
Right, exactly. So this is where there's this really unique disadvantage of these sites, where you find that it's exactly the kinds of people who look most at profiles of others are actually least likely to message them. And I think, so continue the early example, what you find is that it's the shorter guys, the more overweight guys, and the older guys that are actually least likely to message. So they're almost afraid to message other people. And I think the reason for that is that if you think about the underlying technology of contact, it's actually no different in the offline than it is in the offline world. Writing an email to somebody, as innocuous as it might sound, you know, if you send 10 or 15 of those and nobody responds, it really feels really not very pleasant at all, right? So as a consequence, there is something that these gentlemen and also women tend to basically withdraw from messaging and they're sort of being very careful about who they message, which there's this trade-off. On the other hand, if you look at a site like eHarmony, you see almost the opposite. So eHarmony will give you a very limited set of matches, and they will give you maybe sometimes only 7 matches a day, and you can't look at everybody. So it really limits the amount of people that you see. But on the other hand, once you actually message these people, the likelihood that you'll get a response from them is much higher. And the key reason for that is very simple. So imagine you and I own this site. If I have 7 matches and you're one of my 7 matches, if I message to you, I'll be one of your 7 matches. So you will look at me and be like, Harvard professor, why am I going to see that? Like, but you're like, it's only 1 of 7. It's like, I'll give him a try, right? And so even that sort of, it was just sort of interesting how by restricting the choice that people have, you're obviously making it harder for people to look, but you actually get much more of a response rate on eHarmony than you do on the other side. So I think that's sort of – this is why it's never – one side will never sort of meet all of your needs, right? And it's always tell people, like, try different avenues. Try this and try that, because each and every one of those sites will give you very different experience, very different sort of process, and you should be probably following them all, because there is not a single type of dating platform that will sort of make your life just, you know, smooth. So that's why you have to sort of use all three.
Now, when if we go back to the bar approach, the approach of the website where you are basically just seeing everybody's face shot and looking around the way you would in a bar and figuring out who to approach, I think you've looked a little bit at whether those kinds of sites reward the people who really wouldn't have very much trouble meeting anybody anyway.
Right. So you have to – I mean, this is very interesting. It really – there's this debate going on whether, for example, these sites are making us more social, or whether they're actually substituting the sort of the offline world interactions, whether these sites are really truly helping those who need them most in terms of interactions, because obviously people in the offline world vary in how much offline interaction they have, or do they already sort of reward people who are so social and they just sort of – turbocharging those who are very, very social. And the answer to that question turns out not to be straightforward at all. There are certain functions. It really all depends on the kinds of functionalities you're going to build. There are certain functionalities that you will build that will only help people who already feel fully social and they're not afraid of reaching out to others. And there's functionalities that will help people who otherwise would have really hard time contacting others. So a great example of that is that one of the sort of big offline norms of interaction, particularly in the dating world that we see, is one where women are not supposed to approach men and men are supposed to approach women. And in some ways, some people might say, well, this is very natural. Another way of thinking about it is like, well, it's probably quite difficult for women to approach men, the ones that they really like, and wouldn't it be awesome if we could actually design functionalities online that would actually help women do that? And in many ways, both OkCupid and eHarmony have some of these functionalities, because actually even something as simple as saying, look, the site has designated these following 3, 4, or 5 men for you to contact, and if the site recommends these to women, women are actually much more likely to take these recommendations, not because they fundamentally believe that they can make decisions on their own. Of course they can, but it's more, it's just an excuse that these sites are giving these women to contact men. In many ways, the woman can then just say, oh, well, you know, I'm not really writing to you because I'm like super interested in you, but it's sort of like the site tells me to do this, right? So even simple things like this can really help change the way people interact. In fact, it's sort of very interesting in many ways. Very often people think about these sites as the closer they resemble the offline reality and the closer they sort of take the offline interactions and put them online, the better they are. And in reality, actually, the opposite is true, right? If you're really trying to help people interact in ways that they don't interact in the offline world, you better actually redesign the functionality. You better make the interaction different from what it is in the offline world. And we already sort of talked about this example when we talked about Facebook, how in Facebook I can actually go and check out your pictures without you knowing. Well, it's really hard to do that in the offline world. And what Facebook has done is taken that and restructured it so we can actually interact with each other in ways that we wouldn't be able to do otherwise.
Now, on commercials of online dating sites, there's a lot of talk about how successful they've been in terms of placing people in online relationships and marriages. In terms of the data that you can talk about right now that you've seen, is there a difference between different sites or different approaches and what approaches work?
Right. Well, it really depends on what your end goal is. If you are going to be interested in marriage, there are sites that are better. And if you're going to be interested in short-term dating, that's obviously a different affair. So if you're interested in getting married and establishing a long-term relationship, it's probably a little bit better to engage in some of these sites where contact with people is actually a little bit more limited, so like eHarmony or Chemistry, simply because what it allows you to do is it really allows you to understand your preferences correctly. And what I mean by that is you know, I always tell people there's two ways of thinking about how you will find the person you will truly love. And one is, you know, there is this amazing person out there for me that I just need to find and find him or her. Or there is this process that I have to go through to actually understand and develop myself and actually develop that relationship. And I think in many ways, a lot of sites have sort of focused on the former. Both eHarmony, but also other sites sort of use these advanced mathematics to say, oh, this person is super compatible with you, this person is not compatible with you. And once we find that sort of super compatible person with you, that's it. That's all you need to do. And what research shows is that it's while it really helps to find somebody that's sort of mildly compatible with you, it really what really works is sort of helping you navigate the process. So basically, you know, putting you out on some dates that you maybe would not go to, because I mean, as much as we often state our preferences on these sites that we're interested in these type of people and not interested in those type of people, more often than not, when we actually go out on dates with people we don't know, we wouldn't otherwise go with, we actually find that it's like, oh, wow, these people are actually really interesting. And that's largely because, you know, the way we develop compatibility is through affect and liking and attraction that cannot be sort of put down to, you know, this is the kind of height that I want, this is the kind of weight that I want, right? I mean, there's just this is the kind of age that I want. These are very poor predictors of what really drives attraction. So if anything, I would always encourage the sites and also the users of these sites to think of this as a process, really sort of finding out more about your own preferences, what you like, and also finding, you know, not thinking that the best person out there is going to be the first person that you meet, and really sort of try and get a number of those trials to basically find who you're really compatible with and who really sort of fundamentally cares about you, rather than be thinking about, you know, the parameters of you know, the height and the weight of this person.
Meshach Piskorski, Associate Professor of Business Administration at Harvard Business School, thank you so much for coming in. We will be back next week with more big ideas. I'm Kara Miller, and this is Innovation Hub, online at wgbh.org/innovationhub, where you can find more information about our guests, and you can link to our free iTunes podcasts. This is 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio. Dream lover, so I don't have to dream.